So a congregant at my former congregation in North Carolina challenged me. He suggested if you use had saints, George Carlin should be among them. Shouldn't we have a feast day for him on the anniversary of his death? I loved the idea and I wanted to go for it, big time. A service full of silliness, jokes, and gags. It was a time of economic uncertainty, natural disasters, conflicts, and tensions around the world, pain, suffering, and uncertainty for many in the congregation or their loved ones. I guess maybe like now. I just thought it was time for us to forget all the sadness and tragedy and get our lives in balance again. I would speak on laughing as a spiritual discipline. But then the countdown began. The countdown on the life of the daughter of a congregant, a woman who was beautiful inside and out, who was 1 year younger than me, with three amazing teenage boys. She was dying a horrible death from a rare kind of brain tumor. The day before I was to deliver my sermon on laughter and George Carlin, I officiated Kathy's funeral. I knew the meeting house on Sunday morning would be filled with grieving people and heavy hearts. I decided to axe the silly service idea this time around. On the one hand, I say that, but then I carried a picture in my head of myself on the way to Kathy's funeral. I had almost arrived at the funeral, and I was listening in the car to the radio show, Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. Have you heard of that show? It's on National Public Radio in the U.S., and it's hilarious. The host of the show just noted, as I was driving to the funeral, just noted that the pork industry was looking for a new slogan. In the U.S., for the longest time, there would be pork commercials where they would advertise pork as, quote, the other white meat. Well, that slogan wasn't cutting it anymore, so the comedians on the radio show were coming up with their own ideas for a new slogan, like pigs. Secretly, they enjoy being eaten. And instead of takes a lickin' and keeps on kickin', pork, it takes a lickin' and also a chewin' and a swallowing. Or pigs, inventors of bacon. But my personal favorite was the one with an interfaith theme, pork, the only thing Jews and Muslims can agree on. So here I was, driving up to an historic family cemetery where I knew hundreds would be attending, including local dignitaries, and me, the minister of all people, was in the car, laughing my head off. I'm looking around, wondering if anyone saw me laughing as I drove in. Then, after the somber funeral home attendants in black helped me park the car, I get out of the car in my lovely ministerial robe and my beautiful stole, and I look down at my feet and realize, in my rush to get out of the house, I had slipped on the wrong shoes. I had put on my rattiest open-toed beach sandals with my long overdue for new toenail polished toes hanging out rather than my dignified closed-toed sandals. I was certain that the bereaved family, the big shots, everybody, I think there were nearly 400 who attended, would be staring at my toes the whole time, wondering about these long-haired freaky UUs or something like, don't they have any respect? I just about had another fit of giggles, but I got a hold of myself again. Here I was at such a sad event, the funeral of a beautiful, giving, sweet person who died too soon at the age of 48 after much suffering, leaving 3 sons and a whole community grieving. A family who I had cried over just thinking about them over the months since it was discovered Kathy had the tumor. Such tragedy. And yet there I was at the funeral with enough room in my heart and soul to laugh. From the Vietnamese Buddhist priest and peace activist Thich Nhat Hanh, please call me by my true names, so I can hear all my cries and my laughter at once, so I can see that my joy and pain are one. Joy and pain are one. Can that be? Well, there the two of them were, sitting together in all those small moments for me on the day of Kathy's funeral. In the dualistic either-or world of the so-called West, we tend to pull joy and pain apart, celebrate and lift up joy, deny stuff and numb pain. I think of my professor of Eastern religions in college whenever he would ask us on any given subject, is it this or is it that? The answer always was that it was both, everything. Is all in all. It was through this professor that I first experienced the practice of sitting meditation. To me, meditation before then seemed to be a serious affair, requiring quiet calm and concentration. Then one day the professor showed us an Alan Watts film. You know, Watts, known for being the British interpreter and popularizer of Eastern philosophy for a Western audience. At the end of the film, the camera centered on Watts in a traditional pose of meditation. Then he threw his head back and just started to laugh. And that was the end of the film. And all of us young college students awkwardly laughed too, wondering if that was okay. It kind of felt like we were going to get in trouble for laughing in church. As I said before, isn't religion supposed to be a serious affair? There is a story that is passed around our Unitarian Universalist circles of a young mother and her 7-year-old son who spent many Sundays visiting different churches, you know, church shopping. They were not very pleased with any of them, but it is said that when they visited the First Unitarian Church of Detroit, all the boy could say for a week afterwards was, "Can we go back to the church where people laugh?" So perhaps there is a tradition among UUs for laughing in church, like there is a tradition of laughter that can be found in Buddhism. Just think of a familiar laughing Buddha image. The jolly Buddha figure with a wide grin and big belly that must shake when he laughs. For Buddhists, the laughing Buddha image is meant to be a reminder of the notion that I can hear all my cries and laughter at once. I can see that my joy and pain are one. Don't let his laughter fool you, for the Buddhist will tell you all dukkha, all is dukkha, all is suffering. Self-help author Susan Jeffers noted in her blog, as many of you already know, I'm a lover of the Laughing Buddha. I think you'll all agree that we all take life too seriously. Because of my love of the Laughing Buddha, I've placed a number of them around our house and office as a reminder to lighten up and enjoy it all. As a constant reminder to lighten up, I suggest you purchase a Laughing Buddha. They come in all sizes. A little one to put on your desk or next to your bed or both would be a good start. But that's not what the Laughing Buddha is all about, that we shouldn't take life too seriously. You know, don't worry, be happy. The message of the Laughing Buddha is more complex than that. Reverend James Ishmael Ford, a well-known Buddhist UU, wrote this about the Laughing Buddha. He notes, it was spring. As I walked out into the backyard, I glanced across the greening grass at my concrete hotei. And I thought I saw a crack, a really big crack, running right through him. As I realized this, I thought back to how he had been given to me. It had been hinted that I was to be given a Buddha by the congregation, and I was looking forward to it. But when my friends presented me with a cast concrete yard art Hote, I felt a wave of disappointment wash over me. Hote, also known as Putai, while frequently called the Laughing Buddha, is not a Buddha at all. In fact, I had always found him a little annoying because in popular American imagination, he was frequently the Buddha, a fat, jolly guy seen either standing with his hands raised above his head or sitting on the ground with one knee up. Hote always has a wide grin and an even wider stomach. Sometimes the sitting version has kids crawling all over him. In fact, Hote is rather more like Santa Claus. He was an historic Zen monk who wandered from village to village with a bag of treats he gave to children. Together with the Bodhisattva, Jizo, he is a patron, a protector of children in East Asian culture. Altogether an admirable figure, but he isn't a Buddha. James continues, I found myself thinking of something a great meditation master once said about broken glasses. One day, some people came to the master and asked, how can you be happy in a world of such impermanence, where you cannot protect your loved ones from harm, illness, and death? The master held up a glass and said, someone gave me this glass, and I really like this glass. It holds my water admirably. Admirably, and it glistens in the sunlight. I touch it and it rings. One day the wind may blow it off the shelf or my elbow may knock it from the table. I know this glass is already broken, so I enjoy it incredibly. The glass is already broken, so I enjoy it incredibly. This is one of the key concepts in just about every religion. That the world is imperfect and broken. There will be the poor always, disasters yesterday, today, and tomorrow, cruelty and injustice. But every day we must live as if there is love and fairness, and that children aren't left to die hungry, that someday there will be world peace, that one day there will be no conflict among ourselves and those we care for. Only if we live as if, may we laugh and love. Only if we live as if, might we have a fighting chance at making the world a better place. And we all know what happens when we lose this hope and trust of as if. We are saddened and despair sets in. Oftentimes, we think of Buddhist non-attachment as detachment from the world. Yet, if you truly understand and take in Buddhism, especially as interpreted by Thich Nhat Hanh, then how else would you respond but with a deep compassion? And whenever goodness and gifts arise, how else could you respond but with childlike surprise and a deep gratitude? In the words of George Carlin, what might be our attitude in the world? He said, I'm a modern man, a man for the millennium, digital and smoke-free, a diversified, multicultural, postmodern deconstruction that is anatomically and ecologically incorrect. I've been uplinked and downloaded. I've been inputted and outsourced. I know the upside of downsizing. I know the downside of upgrading. I'm a high-tech lowlife, a cutting-edge, state-of-the-art, bi-coastal multitasker, and I can give you a gigabyte in a nanosecond. I'm new wave, but I'm old school, and my inner child is outward bound. I'm a hot-wired, heat-seeking, warm-hearted, cool customer, voice-activated and biodegradable. I interface with my database. My database is in cyberspace, so I'm interactive. I'm hyperactive, and from time to time, I'm radioactive. I'm feeling, I'm caring, I'm healing, I'm sharing, a supportive, bonding, nurturing, primary caregiver. As Thich Nhat Hanh said, may we all be called by our true names, so we may hear all cries and laughter at once, so that we may see that joy and pain are one. Every moment is eternity, when all that was and is and yet will be is collapsed into one. All joy, all sorrow, may it be so.